Dana, alcohol it. That sounds loud over there. Let's see. A little nervous, but I usually start out by saying this because I went to rehab a lot of different times, and there was this exercise that this guy did this one time that like really stuck out to me, and his name was Jay Westbrook, and he had us all go around the room, and he was like, "Look for things that are red, and who can ever find the most amount of red is gonna win." And I was in rehab; there was like nothing else to do, so I wanted to win. I was like looking for the fine detailed things. I was like, oh, nobody's gonna see that dot and that like one thing. And like we went around the room and I closed my eyes and he was like, what was blue? Like, son of a bitch, I was looking for red. And he was like, you're gonna get what you're looking for, right? If you wanna keep finding reasons to keep going back out that door and keep getting loaded and keep getting drunk and keep going on the path you're going, like that will be right in front of you. But if you wanna start finding like things that God's gonna place in your path to pull you out of the hell that you've been living in, like you'll find that as well. And that really stuck out to me because this last time that I went to rehab that I actually stayed sober, like I looked for God in things to pull me out of that hell. And it still works and my mind is conditioned to like look for God. So this is just like a really quick, funny, interesting story. So I vape and I do everything alcoholically. So you know, like I always have like six vapes on me and they say like no vaping on the plane. And I'm like, fuck you, I'm vaping on the plane, I'm like sleep. Like I don't even have the courtesy to go to the bathroom. You know, I'm at the Canyon Club. They're like, no vaping during the meeting. I'm like, okay, they took to everyone else. They're just not sneaky enough. You know, like I just never stopped vaping where they told me to vape. And then like I just, you know, put myself around people that think vaping is super normal and it's just like acceptable. And like so we vape hard and heavy. And then like one day, like 2 weeks ago, I was like, oh, they're under my pillow. I got a couple spares, you know what I mean? I get my cell phone, I gotta decide, do I like want to charge my phone up or maybe blah blah. Right, I'm gonna like charge my vape a little just so I can get a hit, and I'll put my phone in. You know what I mean? Like fucked up shit. It's like alcoholically. Like I just do everything. So a couple weeks ago, I was like, oh, my lungs are hurt. Maybe it might be vaping. Not sure. Oh yeah. Even when they got dental work done and they were like, no vaping, I fucking sniffed it. I went like this. I was at a trade show in the industry I work at, and then people in China, like they made sniffing puppy ones. There was like one that he was like, oh, you blow your nose. I was like, can I borrow that? I like to take on the galley with me that I don't feel weird. But anyway, that's I believe it. So and God, I'm gonna bring God into this. Like, I promise. So I was like, my lungs hurt. I was like vaping at night, and I was like thinking, like maybe it's time to start. You know, like I'm always one of those people. I wasn't out on the streets. Like I need to get sober, and I knew I wasn't gonna get sober. Like I knew I wasn't gonna get sober, so I wasn't trying. I like I knew I was gonna be fucked up. I knew I needed to have the most amount of whatever it is that we're getting loaded on, and I knew nobody was getting sober here. And so like I wasn't. I'm not really one of those people that like tries and fails and tries and fails and tries and fails. I just keep going for it. So like I get this idea that it's like time to maybe stop vaping, and one of my best friends is going to Mexico for this major surgery, and like you know for like a month we're like praying about it, and I'm like, you're gonna be good, and like the whole time I'm praying for her, and like she leaves and I'm waiting and I'm like praying, and all of a sudden she calls me up and she's fucking devastated. She's like, they won't do the surgery. And I'm like, what? What? I mean, like, it's this major, like, tell me, like recovery. And I'm like, why? And she's like, because I vape. I was like, oh shit. So I'm like, well, you're not putting alone. You're not gonna be in the house. Everyone's vaping around you. So like God's telling me like one thing, like you think it's time to vape, it's feeling like it's time to vape. I'm gonna put all these positions in your life to make you like vape. So I end up out at in my mom's, and I'm on my last vape with another one of my good girlfriends that's quitting too, and like we're all getting sick, like everyone's lungs suck, like nobody can even breathe, but we're still like hitting this last vape. And and then I'm like, we have this book we're supposed to read, like Alan Carr's book, like to quit smoking. And I'm like, I hate reading, I keep falling asleep. So I get the audiobook, and the audiobook literally ended like I started it yesterday, and it ended as I pulled in my driveway last night, and I stopped like somewhere. So then I'm like, I'm stopping. I want to quit vaping at Morongo. That's where I want to pull off. I know that exit. This is where I'm going to throw out my vape. Like, make sure we stop there. You know, she's missed it. This is choking on fucking peanuts. That was too spicy. So I was like, we missed the exit. I wanted to quit vaping on. And she was like, we'll pull off at the next one. And we pulled right into the parking spot. And there's a big sign. And it said, it isn't easy quitting. And like, we walked up and took like 10 vapes and like took a picture and threw it out. And like, honestly, God relieved that same obsession. Like, I haven't wanted to vape. I didn't wake up. I slept through the night, like all day long. I've been around people vaping. Like, it's the weirdest thing when you're ready and you like ask off or something. Like, all those things are designed, like, if you're looking for them, you know. And that's how it was for me when I got sober off of drugs and alcohol, because like I was fighting that, you know. I was fighting that since the day I came out, like that God conscious, that God inside of me. Like, I didn't know what it looked like. So I only started that because I really like have my sponsees start before they even start their steps, like send me a list of things. I usually get people that believe in God sent my way, just because I don't know why. I just have never had experience with not believing in God. So I have them send me like a God list, like, where do you see God showing up for you? Like, just to retrain your brain to think of these things, you know? Because we have to think like that. Like, I'll think like the worst, and then all of a sudden the worst is growing, you know? But if I'm like looking for God, like that's going to start growing too. So just a little bit about myself. I was raised in New Jersey and New York. And my dad came home from Vietnam, like on heroin. He worked for the mob, and he sold a lot of drugs, and he wasn't sober. And my mom, she was like this perfect, like normal person, and she lived in the country. And I went back and forth between the two of them, and I had like a weird sense of like, nobody will ever hurt me because of my dad, and then like also don't ever say anything because of my dad also. Like, if my mom had known what was going on when I was younger, like when I went to see my dad, I wouldn't see him, you know. And it didn't seem abnormal to me to have a dad that was angry like that, to have somebody, like, he would chase people down and like rip them out of their car and like beat the shit out of them and like just get back in the car and we would just keep cruising. And I was just like normal, because I thought that everybody's dad did things like that when they would cut them off and almost harm their daughter. But now I know that's not true, you know. But it like had me grow up with like this idea that nobody could hurt me, you know, like, not like I could do whatever I wanted and nothing bad was gonna happen. One time I almost got arrested in Mexico. I was like, call my dad. They were like, you're in another country, you know, it's not gonna work here. So I was raised Catholic also, and I remember from a very young age, like, not understanding what God was. Like, I would lay in my bed and I would be like, okay, if there was nothing, like nothing, no universe, no planets, no God, no nothing, would there be nothing because there was never something? Or would it still be nothing? Or does it have to be something to be nothing? Or would it all be black if black wasn't black? Like, and I was like fucking poor, dude, just having anxiety about like God that young, like that intense too. I'd be like, what does it all mean? And then I would go to church and it wouldn't mean anything. Honestly, I'm sorry if you like Catholic church. I didn't get much out of it. There was a lot of kneeling and whatever. Like, come tell the priest all your sins. It's like, I'm not falling for that one. I'd be like, I said a bad word at dinner, you know? And so that was just like my childhood. I grew up like that, like super confused about the concept of God. The only thing I knew was like I was lonely no matter where I went. Like, I had that impending loneliness amongst my friends, amongst my family. Like, it was just like this deep rooted loneliness that like I just couldn't fill. And so it like kept me running for a really long time, like just like constantly running, like on the move, like it didn't matter, like to the next thing. Like I have sometimes I think of this, I'm like, yo, you were so crazy that you'd be like at the show and you'd be like, I can't wait till after party. Like you're so loaded up, like waiting to, like you can't wait for the after party. Like I'm not even happy at the party because like my mind was to like always set on the next thing. Because like something had to fill this hole and it had to be the next thing, you know? So I moved out here and I grew up and I got married and I had kids and I like knew that I was going to be okay. I knew that I was going to be successful and that like my life was going to be okay and like that hole and everything I had been missing would be like complete, you know? I'd have that family I never had, like unit and these beautiful kids to love, and like I just kept getting them and like getting all the things that were like on my checklist of like success, you know. I got a career, a husband, kids, boats, cars, houses, all these things, and like then I wasn't happy, and that was like when everything really fell apart, because like now what's gonna fix me, you know? Like I spent my entire life like trying to fix myself from the outside. Or like go to somebody like, oh, Dana's so messed up. Like, let's send her to a therapist. So I would go to the therapist thinking like the therapist is gonna fix me. You know, like I'm like that's what everybody would tell me, you know, I'm gonna go to rehab and they're gonna fix me. And like never once did I walk in and then go like, no, Dana, like you're gonna fix you and we'll show you how. You know, it's just like come back next week and let's keep talking about your problems. You know what I mean? And like nothing was getting fixed. And it wasn't until I got to AA, you know, that I had somebody sit down and tell me, like, you're your problem. You're your solution. Like, you know, you got to tap into this source. That's like I was definitely beyond human aid when I got here. That's for sure. Anyway, I end up with all these things and then my life falls apart. You know, like I drank alcoholically. I was married to somebody who drank alcoholically. Like we had the parties, like they still have the parties, you know, on the boats and all the things. And like for me, I hurt myself and they gave me opiates and like that had definitely changed like the outcome of my life at that time. And like for me, it was a true allergy of the body. Like when I put an opiate in my body, it had done, it was like from the very first time. Like it wasn't a normal reaction. So the next like 5 years of my life, 6, 7 years of my life, on and off of like pills. Like I went on Suboxone, they told me it's not addicting. Like I went to my first rehab when I had like overdosed. This was interesting. Because I went to like some place out in the desert. It's called the ABC. If you know, you know. And they think they lied about like where I was going to my husband, because I remember he was crying when he left me there. But I was like, I ate all these pills and I was like fine. Like I grew up back east. Like I could hang out on Skid Row or like, you know, Beverly Hills. Like it doesn't matter. I could fit in wherever. And so I was fine out there. And then but I had never seen a tweaker yet. That was like what was interesting. They didn't have those in Jersey and New York yet. They do now, but they didn't back then. And what happened was you get to pick what meeting, like NA or AA in the morning. And I was like, well, I picked NA because I love drugs way more than alcohol. And so when I went to the NA meeting, everybody loved drugs too, but it was meth and I had never seen that. And I was like, these people are nervous as shit, dude. Like, they were just like bouncing around, like, because they come from the outside. I was like, what's wrong with this lady? They're doing weird moves. I like honestly had never seen a tweaker. That's all I gotta say. And then it was just all of a sudden a room of them. You know what I mean? Like, and I was so like not that. And so this, but in that moment, this lady had saw heroin or meth, and she signed away the rights to her kid that day. And she came in and was like, "I don't know what's wrong with me. Like, I just shot up in my car and I gave away my child for the rest of their life. And I had my 3 kids at home and I had the nanny and the husband and like nothing had happened." And I remember thinking like, "That will never be me. Like that poor lady. That would never be me. Like, how do you get to the point that like you're willing to give your kids up and forever? And like that would never be me." And so fast forward, like I started shooting heroin when I left there, hung out with tweakers. just all sorts of madness. Like it was insane, like how quickly like I had progressed. I did weird things. Like I always bring this up because it's insanity. Like I was like normal soccer mom type, like taking like my make sure my kids like sitting with the principal, and like now all of a sudden I'm like driving down Harvard Boulevard, like asking some guy if he knows where he could get heroin, where I could get heroin. And he's like, "You're a cop." And I'm like, no, I'm not. And I show him like a spoon and a needle, and he's like, "No, anybody could have those." And I was just like, "Okay, how about my track marks?" And he's like, "Okay, fine." I'm like, "I'll buy you whatever you want to get. Just you have to help me, right?" So he's like, "Okay, but I just got out of prison for 16 years." I was like, okay, so the fuck what? That's not important. That's not what we're trying to do here. So I was like, okay, so what? And he was like, okay, well, here's the thing. You have to like give me the keys to your car and like climb into the trunk and lay low because we're gonna go by the cartel, and if they find out that you're in there, they'll kill you. And I was like, oh my God, this is gonna be the best dope ever. And I like handed him my car keys and climbed into the back of my Tahoe and just like had a limo tint. And I remember like looking, and it was like it ended up being okay because, like, by the grace of God, that wasn't like my story. But 16 years in prison, like sober minded, I'm like, that he probably did sound pretty bad. I know people that get 5 years for doing really bad stuff, you know what I mean? 16, like, geez. But you know what I mean? I said this and it's like funny, but not funny. But I was like, you know, he could be like, I'm gonna rape you and murder you. And I'd be like, okay, that's okay, but let's just get high first. You know what I mean? Like, that's how sick it is. So, like, when I'm out there, like, that's how loud it is. Like, I can't make sense of what's going on. Like, I can't make correct decisions. Like, my. So then I find out I'm pregnant, right? Halfway, I was like 7 months pregnant. I had no idea. In the ER, then I had MRSA, and like by the grace of God, I stopped getting loaded long enough to have my son. And CPS didn't take him away till he was 6 months old, my youngest. And that by this point, my husband has my oldest ones. And you know, now all of a sudden I became that mom, you know, that mom in that first rehab that I knew I would never, ever, ever, ever. I became her. And the only difference between her and I is that I had a family member that took my son and kept him. Because if I didn't, I couldn't get sober. Like the stakes at that time were getting high. And the higher they got, like the more wasted I had to get. And like it just didn't matter. Like the pain I was suffering inside, like the bondage of self, like the obsession I had, it was just like this ferocious beast that I could not like figure out. And I thought at this whole time, like I have this moral problem, like I'm just such a bad mom. I'm like, how did this happen? Like my mom was joking about it when I was just seeing her the other day, and she was like, tell my friend, like, yeah, I called her dad and was like, I think we missed something in high school. I think maybe she's like retarded or something. Because something is seriously wrong with her. Like they really, really said, I mean, like that's what she's saying. I know that's not like the best word to use, but that's what she used. I was just quoting what she used. And my family's from Jersey, they're just like always offending people. So anyway, this is just what it looks like this vicious cycle, in and out, you know. I like get sober one time and I think I don't need AA because I was like, this was like a bad dream, and like who does that? And then I don't need AA like they do because now I know better. I have like the knowledge of what is wrong with me, you know? And so like I stopped going to meetings and I stopped doing my stuff work, and I get loaded one more time. And my friend that came on a run with me, like it cost his life, you know, like he died in the hotel. And like I thought he was snoring. I videotaped him. He was ass breathing on a stroller. That's exactly what it sounded like when I played it back, but I didn't know because I was like under the influence. And that's just like what this disease looked like. You know what I mean? Jails, institutions, and death. I'd been to all of them. I overdosed multiple times. Like I just wasn't dying. And so when I got to my last rehab, I wanted to die, you know. Like I was at a point where like I didn't want to be sober, but I didn't want to get loaded anymore. You know, I didn't want to live that life, and I didn't want to live, but I also didn't want to die. And like, there I was standing with like the one thing I hated the most, which was myself. And I didn't know what to do. And so like I prayed for 1% willingness, because I heard that's all you needed was 1% willingness. And I was like, God, give me 1% willingness to kill myself or to live, but like don't let me go on like this anymore. And like something had started to change a little bit. And so like I started praying for strength, like God, give me the strength to get through this sober. Like that's all I could muster. Like some people are like, get in the book and you know, you need to read the book. And I would like not do that. Like I wasn't that willing yet. You know, I was like, so just, I really wanted to get sober without doing this. I really wanted to get sober without finding myself in an AA meeting on a Sunday night or Saturday night or Friday night, you know, or any night really, or morning or afternoon. So, like I just really got into, like I had gotten to that gift of desperation where like nothing else was working. You know what I mean? When I got to AA, I had like, it wasn't cute, you know, like I would choke myself in the mirror and I would shoot up in my temple and I had like abscesses up and down my legs and I had like popped my implant. It was like really cute. I like rolled in here as cute as could be, and I was just like, that isn't even as ugly as what the inside of me looked like by the time I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. Like I was so dead. There was like nothing left. Like I was so hopeless, and like inside of me was just so, that light was like not there. That light got like, that was not even there. I needed somebody to come like jumpstart it, you know? And thank God, like God please those people. And thank God I heard that guy, Jay Westbrook, and I decided to listen, because then I go to this meeting and I hear my sponsor and she's speaking from a podium and I hear her go, I used to be a fashion model in New York and I love heroin. And I was like, that's my sponsor. Like, I want what she has and I'm gonna ask her to be my sponsor. And that's exactly what I did. And you know what? That was because God let me hear what she was saying that would like have me go ask her to be my sponsor, because that wasn't what she was about at all. Like, she showed up at my rehab and cracked open the big book and like got into immediate action, which was something like I definitely needed, you know? And that's what some of the people say, like, I'll be away with my kids. They'll be like, oh, you took that call. You don't even know that person. It's like, dude, this is life and death. Like, we need immediate action. Like, I will take that call from some guy I don't even know who's like desperate because, you know, my buddy Danny sent me his number and is like, I think you could relate. I think you could help find him a place. It's like, yeah, I can, because it's immediate action. This is a desperate case. Like, this is so life and death for me that if I had made one wrong move in the beginning, I wouldn't be standing here today. I wouldn't have my life back together. My kids wouldn't have their mom. And so God like had put these people on my path. So I end up in this last rehab and I bring the drugs in with me because that was my move. In case I didn't want to really quit, which was generally the case most of the time. And what happened was this girl found my spoon in my fireplace. And she was like, Dana, is this your spoon? And I was like, no. That doesn't look familiar. And she was like, really, you're the only client that's ever gone through this room. It's the new rehab. And I was like, all right, shift this up a little. I was like, the jig was up. You know, this is the time to surrender. And it was like the moment of surrender for me, because I knew that if I walked out that door, I wasn't making it back. And I said to her, like, look, again, a design by God. I had just finished the rest of the drugs that went in that room. Had it been any different, I might have ran out the door. For real, like you don't know, but like God designs stuff like right when you're ready for that moment, you know? And I said, yeah, please don't kick me out that house, because if I leave, I'm gonna die. And you know, she let me stay, and my sponsor showed up, and I got into the steps. And for me, I was so sick. I was so sick, and I was just like, so baffled at how my life could have gotten to like where it was, coming from where it was, that I had to like get into immediate action. So I have a friend who actually passed away like 3 weeks ago while I was in Hawaii. He was killed on a motorcycle accident down in San Juan, but he was like a big part of my early sobriety, and he took me to the that treatment, Laguna Treatment Hospital over here every Wednesday, and he tricked me into speaking on their panel. There were a couple times he like was like, okay, next week you're cut off. We weren't supposed to say that. And I'm like, okay, well, I have like a month sober. I'm sorry, I'm trying to send drugs to jail. Like, I don't know how to do this, but like I do remember him telling me like this is gonna help other people. And I do remember in my heart thinking like I will walk through everything that I've walked through if it means that I help other people, and I still feel that way. So through my entire sobriety, it's been like really interesting. I was always looking for God, but here's a funny story. So I get sober, my sobriety, I could have like a whole thing of like sober stories, but anyway, I get sober and I'm going to leave. My buddy who's here, Greg, thank you for asking me to speak tonight, is like, your headlight's out in your car. And I was like, don't worry about my headlight. I gotta drive all the way up to Ventura to see my sponsor because she's at an H&I convention. So I start driving up to this thing and I get lost and I'm like, new, like totally nuts. And so like I pull over and my fuse is dead because somebody had dropped like a coin in that charging port. So I couldn't charge my phone anymore and I was gonna get lost. So I was like, oh, there was a mechanic guy. He was open. It was a Saturday. He was like, hey, he's drinking. He's like, you want some beer? I was like, no, I'm totally good. I just need help fixing this fuse so I could charge my phone, check me to my sponsor. And he's like, okay, yeah, no problem. He just starts doing it and he fixes everything. And he goes, just hold on a second. Let me just blow that out to make sure nothing's in it. And I was like, okay. And he goes like, oof, one of those like air things, and like in slow motion, this piece of math goes flying out of the thing and straight into his fucking mouth. And he looks at me and he's all, I'll never tell. And then he starts fixing everything on my car, fix the headlight, fix this. And I like get to this thing, this H&I panel, and my sponsor would just be like devastated. Every time I open my mouth, she's like, I'm like, you're never gonna believe what happened. She's like, I probably will. And the thing was like, she required me to do things like be at a meeting. It didn't matter how shitty my car was or how tired I was after work. She was like, you come to see always speaker meeting every Monday night. I don't care. Like, that's what you do. And so that's what I did, you know. And on my way there, I picked up every newcomer that seemed like they wanted to be on fire for this program, like that I could think of. And then they were all friends, like everybody was friends. Like I didn't need the person. I wanted to go up, you know? And I started surrounding myself with people that were going up, you know? And there was no looking back and there was nothing perfect. Like even now, when people are like, can you be my sponsor? I'm like, if you wanna learn how to not do drugs and alcohol, I am your girl. If you are looking for structure and life advice, not the one. I'm not the one. I'm just swinging it too, you know, because I really don't know what God has in store for me. Like, genuinely, that's how I wake up each day. Like, I don't know what God has in store for me today, but I do know that if I stay in action of service to others, which is just like it really comes natural, unfortunately, and fortunately, like it just comes out of my mouth. But like I've been like that from the get-go. Like getting out of self has been super easy for me. And it has like given me this life that like I can't even begin to explain. You know, like I sponsor other people that like my first sponsee that made it a year is now like one of my business partners. And I remember this one time she called me and she was like, Spons, I'm walking home from seeing my kid. Mind you, I only had a year sober. I'm walking home from seeing my kid and there was like a bike in a bush right when I said to God, God, I wish I had a bike. And she's like, and there was no houses around. Do you think I could borrow it? I'm like, oh my God, God is so good. God is so good. And then I get off the phone and my friend's like, did you just call your son? Even still, bike. Oh man. So I call her back and she knows exactly why I'm calling her back. So she's not answering. She's pedaling the bike all the way home. And like, You know, like I make flyers and we try to return the bike and every police station we pull into. She's like, "Are you sure we should go to the police with this?" And I'm like, "That's what they said. That's what they told me. Hey, this is the move." And like just funny, like you know, a year later after that, she was working at this work and some little girl showed up on that bike and once she was like, "Hey, where'd you get that bike?" And she's like, "Well, I'm at this sober living and nobody knew whose bike it was. They said I could use it." And like it's just a weird, like God sprinkles his like existence like that, you know? And then I had a baby, this one baby that I took in so her mom could go to Ashland. And then she didn't stay sober and she bailed and took the baby and it was like really hard. And then recently I took another baby. This is now trending, but it shouldn't be really. It just flew out of my mouth. Like, I'll take this baby if the mom could go to Ashland. I'm like a single mom, I have four of my own kids and don't have time for anything. But God had me say that, you know, and like what the craziest thing was that first mom and baby like had come back around and like that's who went to Ashland reading the big book with the new mom whose baby I now have at my house. And my mom, thank God, signs up just for these things because she's seen like what this program has done for our life. And like my grandfather was actually sober when he passed away. So I have a history of like drinking and stuff in my family, but I also have a long history of recovery and my dad's in recovery. And on the gifts that I get from this program are just like they're unbelievable. And so I had this baby. So I was like, my mom came in for like a couple of days and I had this baby at the house and I thought it was gonna be cute. It was cute. The baby is so cute, but I thought it was gonna be like all my girls were like, "We're all gonna come get together and help you." And I thought, like, team effort, this is gonna be amazing. And I forgot that this baby wasn't gonna miss her mom. And like, I couldn't just keep passing her off to strangers. So, like, my mom, thank God, she's a real one. She stayed for the entire duration of that mom staying. So, like, I was building this company at night. I was up at like 12:30, 2:30, 4:30, whatever. And then my mom would be with the baby during the day. And you know what? It didn't kill me. And like that mom's with the mom today sober. The baby is with her mom in an apartment sober today. And it's just like God like puts all these things in your path, in my path, you know. And I remember driving with my youngest son. He's 10 and he said to this lady, he goes, "Mom, pull over. I want to pay for that lady. I want to give that lady my money." And I was like, "No, but you just keep your money. It's okay." It was obviously a tweaker. Now I could recognize them. Now it's like laser focus. I noticed that groove anywhere, you know. So I was like, "Buddy, you keep your money." And he was like, No, I want to keep my money. Or I want to give her my money." So I was like, I pull over, I let him go out to give the money. And she's like, "I don't need money. I just need a ride home. I got left here 12 suitcases." Like, I know that one too. That was always me. Like, I got all my stuff. It's all going with me. And I don't know why I said to her, like, "I'll give you a ride home." I would never put a tweaker in the car with my son ever. And so here I am driving to her house, supposedly, but you never know. And I'm like dropping my watch under my seat. I'm like throwing 911s to people. I'm like, "Listen, if you don't hear from me in the next 10 minutes, look at my location. I have this tweaker in the car and da 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 da." And I could see my son in the rear view and he's all, "Mom." I was like, "Yeah." And so we had just left the Saddleback Club and he was like, "Hey, my mom," he's like, "Hey, I have 7 years sober and my mom does too." I don't know where that came from. I was like, "You just blame that when they tried to take us out for clothes feeding." But he was like, "I have 7 years sober and so does my mom, and you should give her your phone number because like she'll help you." And I did take the girl's number and she did call me and she's like, "I think I have a drinking problem." And I was like, "We might want to start with a meth, but I don't know, I'm not a specialty in that. That's not where I specialize." But the bottom line is like I get to lead by example. Like even like driving home last night with that book playing in the car, it's like all these things, like I get to like stop the cycle for my children and like continue to be of service and continue to reach out my hand to the next alcoholic. And like they come my way and I don't raise my hand. Like some people are like, ugh, don't raise your hand when they say, like, do you need a sponsor? It's like God sends plenty of people my way to sponsor, and I will never, ever, ever say no. I will never be too busy to like not take somebody's phone call. And like God designed my life so that it could be like that. Like that one girl, she works for me. We have like her little kid in the front office, my business partner, same thing, like kids running around. And it's just like this life is too short to be like stressed and super hyper focused on shit that doesn't matter. And like I remember what it was like to be like at the most hopeless state and like think that I had ruined everything that meant anything to me in my entire life, like my kids, everything. And now like if I speak, you know, from when I spoke for my birthday, my kids will sit in the front row, like dressed up, you know, like proud as anything of me. Because you know what? Like this, there's not a lot of people making it out. You know, I was listening to somebody saying like 3% or whatever it is. And it's like 100% of us can get this if we just do the work. You know, I just didn't want to do the work when I got here. I didn't want to do any of this bullshit. I didn't want to find friends here. I didn't want to find God here, you know, but here we are, you know, like, and this program has given me like everything that I've ever wanted, like friendships and like truly just to be an example, you know, just to be able to be like proud of who I am today, you know, and like the things that I do, you know, that's all I really have. I don't know how much time is left, but that's it.
This thinker is Peter Dana again. Fellow alcoholic has been asked to come up and read the promises and lead us out in the Lord's Prayer.
Will, alcoholic. We are painstaking about this phase of our development. We will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. Work. Whose Father?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and glory forever. Amen.
Hi, Kelly Nelson.
Thank you. Hey.